Welcome to episode 351 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, we had 2 weeks off.
We did, and it felt a little weird. Off. Well, no, not off. Not really off.
Well, but. I mean, we had 1 week that we didn't record. It gave us a 2 week gap. And I swear all I heard about was Microsoft stuff. They had so many sales.
There were
over the holiday weekend.
Yeah, there were definitely a ton of sales. And I have a feeling that if we would have recorded last week, the only thing we would have had to talk about was sales, which might have been a little boring. So maybe it's not so bad that we took the week off.
It's not so bad.
The other thing that wasn't so bad is I got to see you in real life. And Chris and Taylor.
Yeah. They all in the same location.
Yeah. So Chris hosted us as well. He was having a party and invited us along to it when we surprised him and said, "Hey, Chris, Josh is going to be in town. You want
to
get together?"
Guess who's coming to town?
Right. It's not Santa Claus. It's Josh. So yeah, it was a nice, nice few days off work and all that. You know, other than the super long drive, it was a good Thanksgiving holiday. So, and as usual, great seeing you and great to meet some of our other DMZ colleagues. All right, that's enough. Why don't we get into some listener feedback? Because since we haven't done this in a couple of weeks, we've got even more than usual. The way that we got all this feedback was via email. They sent it to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Our first one, actually, this is in reverse chronological order. Our first
our one, most recent one.
Yeah. Is actually, that's not even true. These are all jacked up. First one's from Alan. He says, "With respect to David's issues with Plex, I've been using Plex for quite a while and I'm not sure what he means about changing the names of videos. I've never seen that. I mainly populate my TV shows from my Media Center recordings using MCE Buddy, but also from PlayOn and other services. Movies are done manually from the DVDs I own. Plex uses the TVDB for TV show metadata and the MovieDB for movie metadata. All the metadata is stored in a self-contained database for Plex. I also use Recorded TV HD in Media Center, and it has different metadata, and I do not have any issues with changing data. They have differing poster art and banners, etc., but I really do not mind. It is something, if something is not named correctly, it does not get pulled into Plex. As far as all the seasons not populating, David should look at the specific show in the TVDB to see if the names are what they use. Plex likes a folder structure like this: Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. / Season 1 / Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s S01E01.mp4, which is pretty standard, I think. He says, as long as the seasons and show names are labeled, like above, they should import. I've had some odd issues, and I cut the season folders and copy them to another disk, and then copy them back and run a sync, and that usually pulls them back in. Movies are pretty much the same, with a root folder of the movie name and year, and the movie file in the directory with the same naming convention, like American Sniper, open paren, 2014, close paren, / American Sniper, 2014.mp4. Hope this helps." Alan, I think that helps a lot. I, like you, had never had issues. We mentioned this on the last episode. I've never had issues with Plex not pulling in things, and I just follow these naming conventions exactly as Alan laid them out. So hopefully that will help the issues that David was having. We've not heard back from David, as far as I can tell, although it seems a lot of my email has been going to the spam folder, so I'll check later to see if maybe we got some follow-up from David after the last show.
Something that's interesting on the naming for TV episodes. I don't name my episodes files the way he suggests here. In fact, this is probably the first time I've ever seen an episode named this way. And it might explain why Plex doesn't like my episodic content.
So what do you
I would have named it Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. / season one / SO1EO1 episode name .mp4.
Oh, that's different.
And that has worked in everything else I've ever used, like media browser and like the episodic content that you can include in my movies. So this is kind of new to me. I don't know that I would want to do this, actually. I would not want 22 episodes that all start as Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That seems like bad filing.
I don't know. As long as they get picked up where I need them properly, I guess I don't care. But yeah, that's how I've always done mine. And I know that Plex actually isn't that strict. I was just noticing today that some of my files aren't exactly perfect like that. And sometimes they have extra junk in them. So, and it's still figured it all out. So I think Plex is a little lenient on that. Maybe the most important thing is just that it has the SO1E09er part stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Now, the other thing that I've noticed is that sometimes when looking up against TVDB or the movie TV, what it'll do is it'll end up changing the country on me for some reason.
Don't do that.
And I end up with like completely wrong metadata, and I don't know what's going on with that.
Oh, Alan is in the chat, and he says, as long as you have the name, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and S01E01 somewhere in the file name, it'll work. Sola Sweet also says that the way you're doing it, Richard, is far less common.
Perhaps more useful, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just looking through Windows File Explorer, yes, yours is definitely more useful. If I'm opening up Plex or an actual home theater PC app, whatever that app is doing is the most useful.
Right. But one of the ways that one of the reasons that I wanted to do that was that I wanted to be able to get at these things also through just DLNA. So I wanted a logical file naming sequence for someone that might be just searching the library through normal DLNA connections.
Now that makes a ton of sense because DLNA interfaces are horrendous and trying to use this normal way of like the standard way of doing things, the Plexi way of doing things through a DLNA server would be horrible. I completely understand that. My solution to that is don't use a DLNA server for that. All right. So that's probably enough for Alan's email. Why don't we move on to Antoine's email?
All right. He says, I never really paid attention until recently, but I noticed that at least for me, the guide data in Windows Media Center is much better since the move to Rovi. There's show art and more info for just about every show in the guide, and not some like before, meaning that there was only some show art. Also, since I use MB, that added info and art makes things much more lively and complete there too. So upon realizing just how much better it is for me, I remembered that you, Josh, have had bad things to say about the guide data since the start. I wonder if I just never fully paid attention. It also dawns on me that you're not the only one. I'm pretty sure you've gone into this before here and there, but one more time, a bit more in depth. Tell me, what was your beef with Rovi's guide data? Is it really bad for you and your cable and over the air?
Yes, it really is that bad. And here's the crazy thing. So my best example is with sports. This is where it really, really falls down. Okay, it's Saturday and there's cable football on. There's cable football. There's college football on. And there's like 10 games on at a time because I do still have cable. So there's, you know, a couple of networks and then a bunch of cable channels all airing a whole bunch of college football all afternoon long. If I go into my guide in Windows Media Center, on almost all of those games, sometimes all of them, it just says college football, teams, TBA. That's not useful, especially not when there's like eight games on at the same time, because I'm not going to channel surf between all the games, especially since the, you know, those channels are all split up all over the place. That's right. Nuts. In the previous guy data from Zaptuit, it always said the team names. So the crazy thing is that what I find myself doing now is I go over to my computer at my desk and I go to Zaptuit's website and look at the guide there. And that's where I can see the teams who are playing. But I discovered something else really, really interesting over the last couple weeks. I've been playing with using the tuner with the Xbox One directly, which also obviously uses the Roe v. guide data. That was the main reason they switched the media center to use Roe v. is because the Xbox is also using it. And guess what? It's better on the Xbox. I don't know why, but when I look at the guide for my OTA data on my Xbox One, it shows me the team names. In media center, it doesn't. Now, it's possible. I know that sometimes and somehow, I don't know the specifics or how it works at all, but sometimes over-the-air signals stuff pulls in guide data with it somehow. Again, I don't know how, and maybe that's why it works better on the Xbox for me, but and I don't have my one guide configured for my cable anymore, so I can't do a complete one-to-one comparison, but I know that for the over-the-air tuners on the Xbox, it works brilliantly. In Media Center, it's garbage.
Hmm.
So that's my beef.
Now, of course, when you're looking at Zaptuit, that is the old Tribune data that we used to have in the guide.
Exactly.
Yep. That's weird.
Yeah.
Definitely weird. All right. Well, he continues on and says, just before I hit enter to send the email, I thought I'd do a quick Google search of my local cable company, Blue Ridge Cable in Pennsylvania, and Roe v. Looks like they have deals for guide data and such. I didn't look too much into it, but maybe that explains it for me.
Yeah, maybe your cable provider is just giving Roe v. better data than a lot of the other providers. I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know how these licensing agreements work with the guide data providers and the cable companies and the actual networks and all that stuff, but that could explain it, why it's been so good for you and so terrible for everybody else. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really weird. I don't know how that stuff is sourced either. It's funny now that we're having all of these guide data issues, and now that we are really caring about where this stuff comes from and why the flags are set the way they are and why it's different from one provider to the other, I really wish when I had worked with one of the cable companies as my client years ago, that that's one of the things that I had learned about, because that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. And that could have been really useful to us, Richard. Gosh. All right. Well, thank you, Antoine, for that email. We'll move on to a message from Jeff. He says, hello again. I didn't realize I should have replied until I heard my email being read on your show. I tried uninstalling the tuner. This is, Jeff was the guy that had all of those, the tuner issues, but we weren't sure how many tuners he actually had and all that stuff. But he was getting recordings where you would miss like the first minute of the recording and stuff. He says there's only one tuner, the Hopog 2255, which has, well, there's only one tuner device, which has two tuners on it. That didn't work. I even tried uninstalling the drivers and then actually physically uninstalling the tuner card, rebooting, then reinstalling them. Still no go. I never solved the problem. Fortunately, I'd made an image of the PC running Windows 8.1 before I had upgraded to Windows 10. I installed that image over the rolled back version of 8.1, and it works fine now. Nothing constructive to offer, just thought you might like to know. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff, actually, you do have something constructive to offer. It sounds like if you're using Windows Media Center on a Windows 8.1 device and you're thinking of upgrading to 10, and then you think you might want to roll back using the built-in stuff to do that, don't do that.
Yeah.
Instead, yeah. Make a real backup. That's very constructive.
Absolutely. That's really valuable information. good to know. One of those things where if we had an actual knowledge base, it would probably be good to file that one, because that is probably going to catch some other people at some point in time. So, A, thanks for getting back with us. And B, it's always nice to hear from people and to hear that they've had a successful resolution.
Absolutely.
All right. Our final message is from Larry. He says, Josh, Richard, love the podcast. You're doing a great job and provide a great service. Thank you very much. In episode 349, you mentioned that Time Warner Cable is working on a Roku app, and you're worried that if Charter acquires them, the app could be canceled. Believe it or not, Charter already has a Roku app, an iOS app, an Android app, and an Amazon app to watch live TV. Here are some links, and we'll have these in the show notes. And he says also, Charter's minimum internet service is 60 megabytes with down, with 4 megabytes up, with no data caps. I'm on Charter, and I pretty much love it. He sent this before Thanksgiving, so he said, thanks and happy Thanksgiving, Larry. Well, that is really good to know. I'm glad to hear that Charter does have apps. You know, this is a company that I know so little about.
Yeah, me too. You know, when I read this email from Larry, my first thought was, stop bragging. No one likes a bragger. I want to have Charter Cable now. No, just kidding, Larry. Thank you so much for that message. Like, I didn't know that much about Charter either, but this sounds really good. It sounds way better than what we hear from, well, pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Cool. Well, thanks to everybody who sent in a message over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully we'll hear from the rest of you, which you can do by sending a message to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All right, so let's move on to our news for the week. So back on episode 348, that's the one that I did with Rob H, we spent a whole lot of time talking about HDR and all that stuff, but we did have a little bit of news to discuss. And one of the things that we talked about in that episode was that the folks behind J River Media Center were considering starting a Kickstarter campaign to fund the development of adding support for copy-protected cable card recordings inside of J River Media Center. Well, they decided to do it. It started. It started already. And you can go and jump in on this Kickstarter campaign. It's available now. It's got 2.5-ish weeks left. And you know, this was like the one news story that we could have talked about last week other than sales. and it's not going to cost you a whole lot to get in on it. It's got fairly similar pricing to, say, what HD Home Run did with their DVR Kickstarter. You've got three options. If you already are a J River Media Center version 21 user, you can make a $20 pledge, and that will give you this TV Plus add-on, which is the thing that does the copy-protected stuff. If you don't have J River Media Center at all, and you're planning to only run it on Windows, then you can give them $60, and you'll get the full version of J River Media Center and the TV Plus add-on. Or for $70, you can get the same thing, but with their master license, which just means you can install it on Windows or OS X or Linux. But the important thing to remember there is the TV Plus add-on only works, or will only work, in Windows. They're planning to use Microsoft's PlayReady DRM, which should sound pretty familiar to a lot of our listeners, because that's what Windows Media Center uses for its DRM when working with protected cable card recordings. They're trying to raise $100,000, and so far, they've only got a little over $4,000. That's my biggest concern about this whole thing. I'm really excited about the project. I want this to succeed. But normally, when a Kickstarter is successful, they have a huge, big rush at the very beginning, and then it kind of dies out a little bit for a week or so, and then another big rush at the end. And they did not get that big rush at the beginning, Richard.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. J River is one of these companies that just doesn't really get a whole lot of popular attention. And they have been doing this for years. I think a decade ago, I was experimenting with J River software that was designed to run on a 10-foot interface.
Yeah, it's been around since like the 90s. They've been doing this forever, and they're maybe not the most well-known despite being around forever. What they're really well-known for is the crazy amounts of customizations and advanced features that you can get into with this. It's really big in the audiophile community because it supports like every format under the sun, and you can customize the ever-living crap out of it. So it's been really useful for that. They do have a 10-foot interface of it, and the default skins aren't really the most pretty things ever, but there are
exactly
third-party skins out there. In fact, I found one called, J River Metro or something like that, which kind of makes it look like a Windows 8 app, and it looks kind of nice. I didn't install it yet, but the screenshots looked kind of pretty. So there's probably some decent themes out there to make it look pretty decent, but I don't know for sure yet. I did start to play around with J River Media Center tonight because apparently it does support TV stuff already,
right,
including these cable card tuners, but only for copy
unprotected.
Free, right, unprotected content. I was having some trouble, but I'm brand new to this. I only got to spend a half hour or so with it. And, so I plan to spend a little bit more time with this. And I really, really do hope that this Kickstarter gets funded, because it would be so nice to see another option out there. You know, until the HD Home Run DVR is available, which it still isn't, right now our only option remains Windows Media Center, which is not really the greatest option if you're building a new PC. You know, it's getting harder to find. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I was going to say it's getting harder to find, you know, a copy of Windows 7 that you can buy. At least I would think that would be the case. And if you have Windows 8.1, you can't add on the TV pack anymore, as we discussed recently. So we're going to need some other options. And so I'm really hoping that this gets funded and that Silicon Dust finishes up their version, because I'd love to play with that too. And, you know, having one or the other would be good. Having both of them would be even better, because competition always improves the products. So
I agree. So one other problem that I have with this, and this could be part of why they're not seeing the uptick on this campaign like they might have hoped, is we've asked people hypothetically, would you pay for Media Center? And I think there are examples that demonstrate that yes, people will pay for Media Center. But I would ask, would you pay $60 for Media Center? Because that's a pretty steep price.
Yeah, and it's twice the cost of, I think it's twice the cost of what Silicon Dust solution is going to be going for, isn't it?
Yeah, for some reason I'm thinking that was 35. I can't honestly remember exactly what that was.
Yeah, I was thinking 30. If you want just, now it's $60 because of the add-on. If you're only planning to use this on Windows, a regular license is $50, which 50 sounds way better than 60. It's obviously not really that much better, but it sounds way better than 60. And I think $50, even $60, is somewhat reasonable to pay. I mean, consider the prices that we were paying for software that only allowed us to watch Blu-rays. You know, all of that software was $100.
Yep.
So I think that they can make this price work. I think their big problem with their campaign is that the Kickstarter campaign doesn't look, it's not all that flashy and exciting like a lot of other campaigns, and it doesn't seem like they're doing a great job of promoting it. But maybe I'm just not seeing it, but I would think that I would be the type of person who would see those promotions, you know?
Right.
And I'm just not. All
right,
so good luck to J River. We'll keep an eye on that to see if they hit their goal. But that's it for this week. Moving on, one of an interesting topic that I found on Reddit over the holiday weekend was some users complaining that their Xbox One with the new Xbox experience, if they were trying to use their Kinect voice gestures to tell the Netflix app to stop, and it wasn't working anymore. And There were a lot of people saying that it wasn't working for them. Some of them said that stop would work, but pause wouldn't. And it sounds like it was a verified, you know, confirmed bug, and that Microsoft is aware of it and that they're working on it. But there was also a workaround mentioned. Apparently, if you say Xbox Select, which hopefully I didn't just trigger a bunch of people's Xboxes. If I did, I'm sorry. That will cause, you know, the on-screen display to show the various things that you can say. And then you can say things like stop and pause and all that stuff, and that'll work. I don't know for sure, because when I got home and tried it on my Xbox, everything worked perfectly. It could be, though, that it works fine for me because I'm still in the preview program. So maybe it's broken if you're not in the preview program and they've already fixed it for those of us in the preview program, which if that's the case, that's still pretty good news because it means that you're probably going to get the bug fix fairly soon, even if you're not in the preview program. I would expect that they'll just do a small update for this. I know that we reported last time that they're not doing any more big updates between now and February, but I would imagine they'll be doing smaller bug fixes in the meantime, especially leading up to Christmas. All right, so that's sort of Xboxy related. Let's stay with that and move on to some gaming news. You know, if we would, like we mentioned earlier, if we would have talked gaming news on an episode last week, the only thing that we could have talked about would have been deals, you know, sales on Xbox games. It's still not really a whole lot different. Except instead of sales, we're talking free, baby. Free games, because it's a new month. It's December now, which means new games with gold. And for whatever reason, this month, instead of giving us two games on Xbox One and two games on Xbox 360, they're giving us three games on Xbox 360 in addition to the regular two on Xbox One. So here's how it's going to work. On Xbox One, for the whole month, you get the Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing, which I think is a brand new game. That's free the whole month, starting December 16th through January 15th. I really hate these, the way they do this. They're going to be giving you Thief, which I don't remember if Thief was a launch title on Xbox One or if it was shortly after it came out, but either way, a pretty decent game, maybe not the greatest in the Thief series, but it's going to be free. And if you didn't get anything else to play over your holiday break, you'll at least have that. So definitely check that out. Then there's the three free games on Xbox 360. Another reminder, and we'll probably continue to remind you of this, all of these 360 games that are available in Games with Gold from here on out are backwards compatible. So even if you don't want to drag out your Xbox 360, you can get these and play them on your Xbox One. So what can you play? Well, for December 1st through the 15th, Castle Storm is going to be available. For the 16th through the 31st, so the second half of the month, you can get two games for free. Sacred 2, which is a like four-player hack and slash, kind of like Diablo, and Operation Flashpoint Dragon Rising. I honestly don't know anything about either of these games. But I'll check them out since they're free. Why not? I bet you'll even download them and never play them.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, before we wrap up our game news, I wanted to give a mention to a recent publication from some people we know. Ian Dixon and Gary Whitaker, better known for the Digital Lifestyle Show and the blog over there, have put out a new book called Entertainment Apps on the Go with Windows 10. And this is about all kinds of entertainment that you can take advantage of on Windows 10 devices. It is available as an ebook, and you can get it as an ebook at A-Press, or it's available in print and on Kindle at Amazon. And in case you don't know, these guys are in the UK. And so this is available for £11.50. I think I said that right.
So what is that, like $47?
Something like that. I think that's probably around $14.
Oh, okay. So it's fairly close. So if you're thinking, why do I need a book that just talks about groove music? Then you're missing out, because they talk about a whole lot more than just groove music when it comes to entertainment apps in Windows 10. They talk about using DLNA, and they talk about setting up other apps like iTunes, and they talk about VLC and YouTube and Plex and you know, lots of, you know, MB server and all of these types of things to set up and use within Windows 10. I'm really interested in this book. I want to take a look at this, because there's probably some things that even you and I could learn, Richard.
No, absolutely. I think this is going to be a great book, and I'm now wondering why I put this under games.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why you put this here either.
Okay, misfiled under games, but I'm glad we mentioned it, because this looks really interesting.
It does. So again, Ian Dixon, Gary Whitaker from thedigitallifestyle.com will have a link to their article promoting it. You know, you mentioned that they're from the UK, and that it's definitely available in UK prices and stuff. But if you're not in the UK, you can get it in the US also. It's at least available on regular American Amazon. I'm not sure about some of the other sites, but on the US version of Amazon, the paperback version is $20. The Kindle version is $16. So
$16. Okay. All right. And Rennie in the chat has corrected me. It is £11.50. I did say it wrong.
All right. Okay. I don't understand how they say lots of things over in the UK.
It's good to know, though.
Yeah, it is. All right. So let's move on to some mobile news, and we'll keep it European too, I guess. So the Lumia 950 XL pre-orders have finally begun shipping in the European Union, right?
Yeah, and it looks like in most European countries, you can now actually get these in a lot of stores. So as I understand it, they're available for purchase in the Netherlands and in Germany and other countries. And I don't know how contracts work, or how actually purchasing a phone works in Europe. I think when you buy these, you just automatically buy them without a contract. Isn't that right?
I think that's how it's typically done in Europe. Yeah. I don't think they normally do the crazy contracts that we do here in the US.
So the price that we were showing here was that if you bought the, I think this is meant for the 950 XL in Germany from Amazon, you could get it for €699 or £493, which sounds about right. I mean, the euro is fairly close to the dollar, and that sounds about right for the prices that we were expecting in the US for that device.
Right. The 650, or sorry, the 950 XL in the US is $650. So that's fairly close. That makes sense. And I mean, obviously, you know, we're used to Microsoft slighting a lot of non-American markets, but fortunately, it doesn't sound like these guys across the pond had to wait very much longer than us. We only first started getting these phones on November 25th, and it looks like as early as the 29th, they became available in the EU. So that's not too bad for our European friends.
Yeah, no, that's nice to see it. And I know we don't often cover availability in other regions, so I wanted to make sure that we brought this up.
Cool. All right, so sticking with some phone news, an interesting article over at Windows Central called "The Surface Phone You've Always Wanted is Happening," but it's not really happening the way maybe we expected that it might have been happening. So Daniel Rubino is the author of this over at Windows Central, and he had reported earlier in the year that he had some sources at Microsoft who had said that they were working on a, you know, essentially a real flagship phone. It would have like a beautiful metal case and all that stuff, and it would come out in May and would have an Intel processor. And that was interesting. A lot of people thought Intel processor, oh, that must be a Surface phone. Well, now Daniel Rubino is saying he's got sources at Microsoft that have told him that phone was not a Surface phone, and they're not doing it. that phone has been canceled. They're not working on it. So that's the bad news. The good news is, instead, they are making what could be called a Surface phone because it's being made by Panos Panay's team. Now, I would argue that that's kind of an odd way of clarifying this because Panos Panay is over all of the hardware devices and has been since, now I'm blanking on his name, the former Nokia head since he left.
Right. Yeah, I'm blanking on his name too.
Stephen Elop, that was his name. Ever since he left, Panos Panay took over that whole division. So anyway, this is apparently going to be made by his team. They're not calling it the Surface phone internally. Apparently, they're calling it Panos's phone. Obviously, that's not going to be what it's called. And I would expect it to be called a Surface phone if this thing actually does make it out. So what is this phone? Well, it's still got an Intel processor. They're apparently working very closely with Intel on a specific processor for this phone. Why does that matter? Well, it could potentially mean that this phone would have the ability to run Win32 apps, like regular desktop apps. Now, that wouldn't make much sense on your little 5-inch phone, but it would make a whole lot more sense in continuum mode when you've got it hooked up to a big monitor and a keyboard and a mouse.
Right.
So that could be really, really interesting, and that could be more of a game changer than what people feel that the current 950 and 950 XL provide via Continuum, because right now, if you're going to use Continuum, it's cool, but it only works with Windows Universal apps that are designed for it. You know, if you're hoping to buy a 950 XL and plug it into a monitor and keyboard and run, I don't know, Visual Studio, that ain't happening because that's a Win32 app, not a Universal app. So that could be interesting. The other important details, of course, would be, when could we get our hands on this thing? Not very specific there, other than to say second half of 2016. More accurate guesses, I would say probably fourth quarter. They're probably going to be targeting the Windows Redstone release, which is probably more like a fall time release for the next big update to Windows 10. And there have been rumors that that would have better enhancements to Continuum and things like that for Windows 10 mobile also. So all of this kind of makes sense. And the whole article lays out some pretty decent reasons for why some of these things may have happened the way that they did, with the phasing out of the Lumia team and products from the former Nokia acquisition. And you know, he also made another really interesting point, he being Daniel Rubino, that if they had released a phone called the Surface phone a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, or any time before then, it probably would have been a really bad thing, because prior to the Surface Pro 3, the Surface was only really well liked amongst Microsoft diehards. You know, the Surface Pro, the Surface RT especially, and even the Surface Pro 2, they weren't exactly met with the greatest praise from the tech community at large. The Surface Pro 3, on the other hand, was, and has done really, really well. But prior to the Surface Pro 3, the Surface team wasn't even making money. They were losing lots of money. Now they're making lots of money. And now the Surface brand is known as, this is good stuff. This is stuff that I want. You know, the Surface Pro 3 is great. The Surface Pro 4 is great. The Surface Book looks really amazing. If you release a phone called the Surface phone at the same time as the Surface RT, that could have doomed both of them. So I can see that argument as a pretty good reason for why they wouldn't have released something called a Surface phone prior. You got any thoughts on this, Richard?
I think all of this is interesting. If they're going to be coming out with a phone that is, in fact, Intel-based, I think that's potentially very cool. I am in the camp of people who couldn't give a damn if it's called Surface or Lumia or anything else. I don't understand how that is actually going to change their success or lack of success in this space right now.
Well, I don't think it would have been the absolute thing to make it or break it, but it could have been a bad thing when Surface wasn't a good thing to be attached to. And Windows Phone didn't need anything else going wrong for it, because right. It's already had enough problems of its own.
Right. I agree with that. I don't know. I couldn't care less if it's called Surface. I'm excited that they're working on a next generation phone. I will tell you that if this means that there's incompatibility with all the other stuff that's been built for the current generation of Windows phones, they just killed themselves.
Yeah, that would be really, really bad. If they wipe out everything again, yeah, we can't go through that again. They can't just nuke the platform.
I think if that happens, developers are just going to say, screw it. Yep. I'm not interested.
But they're putting so much effort into universal apps that I can't see them actually doing that. So, well, I guess we'll see. It's probably a year from now before we actually see this thing released, if it's real. I hope it's real, because the 950, 950 XL look like good phones, but they're maybe not what everybody was really hoping for from a flagship. So hopefully this will be.
Right.
All right. One more mobile device to talk about tonight. And this one really piqued my interest. There is a Chinese manufacturer called Xiaomi that's spelled...
Very nicely done.
It's spelled X-I-A-O-M-I. It's pronounced Xiaomi. People butcher this all the time because, frankly, these Chinese words can be really hard to pronounce. This is a company that may not be very well known to a lot of our American listeners.
Unless you're an Apple fan.
Maybe, but even if you're only like a hardcore Apple tech news reading type person. And that's because this company, what they're really well known for over here, at least, is they make products that look exactly like Apple products. And they've done it again, but this time it's even piqued my interest. So this company, which is huge, huge in China, they sell tons of devices in China. They have phones that look like iPhones, they have tablets that look like iPads, and they've got a new one that's called the Xiaomi Mi Pad 2. Mi Pad being spelled MIPAD.
Of course. How Apple isn't just suing the crap out of this company, I just don't understand.
So, as if the name MyPad wasn't bad enough, this device looks exactly like the iPad Mini 4 or whatever the latest version of the iPad Mini is, which is to say it looks gorgeous. It's got a 7.9-inch display. It's 2048 by 1536 resolution. It's beautiful. The thing that's really different about it is it's got an Atom processor in it. It's got a 2.2 gigahertz quad-core Atom processor in it, 64 gigs of storage, and 2 gigs of RAM for the top-line model that they're offering here. And why is that really interesting to us? Because unlike all of their previous devices, which were Android only, they're offering a version of this with Windows 10.
Mm.
None of this means anything if it isn't a lot cheaper than an iPad, though. And it is. If you do the conversion from Chinese RMBs to US dollars, this thing is about $200. And that's about half the price of an iPad Mini 4.
Wow.
So I'm really interested in this thing. Now, they don't sell them in the US, but I tend to know people who go to China. So I'm very interested in trying to get one of these because it looks phenomenal. It looks really, really great. And to have a beautiful device like that running Windows 10 would be right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is really slick. And I like the iPad Mini a lot.
I bet you do. Wouldn't it be so much better with Windows 10?
I would say that I would love an iPad mini form factor with Windows 10 on it. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. So Sola Swede, who's obviously from Sweden, says that they sell their devices there. So maybe this isn't just China and other like Asia Pacific markets where they're selling their things. So maybe some of our European listeners would be able to get these without having to like, you know, send a friend to China to get one for them. But huh. Yeah, I'm super curious about this. If you live in a country where some of Xiaomi's products are sold, this is something you should be on the lookout for. It's supposed to come out before the end of this year. So be on the lookout for the MiPad 2.
That's very cool. Well, that is going to wrap our news for this episode. But while we're talking about iPad minis and similar devices, I took on a project this weekend, and I finally have the touchscreen that I have wanted in my kitchen for how many years now? I don't know. It's not a big screen. It is an iPad mini, and it is mounted to my wall. Not so much on the wall as in the wall. So I bought a mounting kit on Amazon, and I had been researching different mounting kit options. And when I was at Cedia, I kind of came to the conclusion that the one that I wanted was the one that is sold by iPort. And iPort is a brand that sells a bunch of different control devices and mounting systems. And they've been around for a long time. And I've seen their things occasionally. I think they used to sell them at Magnolia outlets and Best Buy. But I never really got around to saying, all right, well, you know, I'll get a device. I'll get one of these things. I'll look into installing it. Josh, I should have done this years ago. It was so easy. It was unbelievable. Now, you actually have to cut a big square hole in your wall. And I did that. And then you have to pull low voltage cable to it, like Ethernet.
Right,
and I did that.
That's the kind of tricky part here is, now, there are lots of beautiful mounts, but these things have got to be powered. So how does that all work?
Right. So it actually comes with everything you need to do this except for the wire. So it comes with a converter that allows you to take your lightning cable that you have with your iPad and convert that to standard low voltage power that comes from their power supply. It comes with really nice connectors that you can just connect your Ethernet or other low voltage wiring to. You draw your cable, and on the other end, you then connect that through a wall mounted connection block that they also provide that you would just install in like a low voltage outlet box that you can install in any wall or in any box. For me, it was in my attic. So I just connected it to one of the beams, drew the wire to that, plugged in the power supply that they gave me into a nearby outlet, and boom, I have power directly down to the box where my iPad is mounted. And it mounts flush. It mounts so that it sticks out with the frame about 4 millimeters from the wall. It looks completely built in because it kind of is now. And I just keep it always on. And now I have a controller for TV. I can run my media center on it. I can run, meaning the program, my media center. I can run the TiVo app. I can run my Insteon Control app. I can run the Nest app. I can run anything that I need to control my home. I can run the Sonos app, which is probably what's going to be on there more than anything else, because that really controls the audio throughout my home. And it basically cost about $230, I think, for the whole kit, which, I say includes everything you need except the wire. And then an iPad, and I have spare iPads around. I actually found one that was on sale so I could have a high resolution one, and I included that into this kit. It's great. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Very cool.
Yep. So that was my big project for the weekend. Took Saturday afternoon pretty much to get that all installed. And over the last week or so, I did watch a little bit of television. I'm all caught up on Homeland now. And I restarted Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix. Did you ever try watching this?
Nope.
You might like this show.
I doubt it.
It it's not your typical sort of superhero show, and I forgot how good it was. So I started from the beginning again, and I've been watching through a couple of episodes, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So I hope to get through that. I think it's only 10 episodes for the first season. So that's been what I've been up to.
All right. So for me, I haven't gotten to watch a lot. Like I said, I was traveling over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, which means that I wasn't watching much TV of my own. And I also didn't bring my Xbox, so I wasn't gaming much either. So I'm still really, really far behind in Fallout 4. I haven't played that in like 2 weeks now. And I haven't really watched anything with the exception of a lot of college football and NFL football over the holiday weekend. I did get caught up, except for this week's episode, I guess, of The Walking Dead. I had actually gotten 2 episodes behind on that. Frankly, the season had started doing what it always does and got a little boring, and I stopped watching. And then I went into work last week right before, you know, I was about to leave for the rest of the week. And my boss said, "Hey, did you watch last night's The Walking Dead?" "Nope." "You need to." "You really, really need to." And I said, "All right, I guess I'll try to find a way to watch 2 episodes of The Walking Dead before I leave on vacation." And he was right. It did get better. And of course, it makes sense that it got better because this last week was the mid-season finale. So they, of course, ramp storylines up going into the big winter break. So that's about it for like regular shows that I've been watching. I talked about this a little bit earlier. I re-hooked up my over-the-air antenna and tuner to my Xbox One to try and give all of that another try, because, you know, I knew I'd be watching a lot of college football over the prior couple of weekends. And that's, you know, there's always some decent games on local networks. So I was doing that, and, you know, the experience is pretty good. I do like it when it's working well, but, you know, sometimes for whatever reason, despite having the powered Mohuli 50, you know, sometimes a channel or two still just won't come in great without, and that's with me, like everything will work fine. I won't move the antenna or anything, and then I'll come back later and a channel just won't work at all. Like
what?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, we got back from our trip Sunday night. I turned this on. Actually, I guess this was last night, and thought, you know, I'm not really watching anything, but let's just see if everything works. And my CBS affiliate got like no signal at all. A couple of the other affiliates worked fine. I only get like 6 channels over the air, and like 4 of them worked fine. One of them worked mostly fine, and then one of them just didn't work at all. But, you know, like that previous weekend, they were all working fine. So it's a little flaky, but I don't have it mounted super well. There's probably some other things I could do to make that work better. But considering it's not my primary way of watching TV and it only impacts me, I haven't devoted a lot of time to making that work better. If it impacted Jen or the kids, that would be a completely different story. So I'm going to keep messing with that, especially since, hey, the guy data is better. And, you know, I'm just trying to get back into that as I'm anticipating Microsoft eventually releasing that DVR functionality for the Xbox One. And I want to be prepared and ready for that. On the video game side, the only thing that I've gotten to play some is Call of Duty. And that's because they keep sucking me in. I mean, I love the game either way, but the weekend prior to the holiday weekend, they were doing a double XP weekend, which meant that's all I was going to play so that I could try and level up my guy even faster. And then this last weekend through Monday, they were doing double weapon XP. So when I finally got back on Sunday, I had to jump on and play some Call of Duty Black Ops 3 again. Absolutely love that game. But I'm bad. I'm really, really bad And I already put this out on Twitter. I suck and I need some help. I need you guys to help me be better at Call of Duty. You need to help me learn what it is that I need to do to actually be better at multiplayer. Because I enjoy it, but a kill-death ratio of 0.39, it's not very good. Richard, that means for every one kill that I get, I'm getting killed about three times.
Yeah.
So not good. So I could use some help, guys. Help me, please. Help me. Email me. Anything. Twitter me. Anything. I need help. All right. So that's it for my TV and gaming stuff. It's your week, Richard, to do a podcast pick, but you don't have one.
So yeah, I didn't have one this week. Sorry.
That's all right. I've got a good one that I just found. This is brand new. This is called Dinner with Racers. As the name suggests, you're only really going to be interested in this if you're into automobile racing. And you can be a fan of a lot of different types of racing. They talk to sports car racers, IndyCar racers, NASCAR guys, and it's not even just racers. Like episode one is with Andy Lally, who's done a lot of sports car stuff and some NASCAR stuff. Episode two is with Bob Varsha, who is a really maybe one of the best known racing commentators, at least in America. He's been, you know, he's done F1, he's done basically everything, and he's really, really good. And so it's basically a podcast of these two guys who drove, I don't remember, they said like 5,000 miles or something like that, into 20 states and had dinner with like 28 different people involved in the racing world and recorded the conversations. And it's really, really interesting. There's a lot of really funny stories. And it's just a whole lot of fun to listen to. You know, if you like sitting down and having fun conversations with people, it's just like listening in on one of those conversations. As you might expect, there is occasional language that is beeped out. Sometimes it's not always beeped out. So maybe you don't want to listen to this in front of the family. It's not nearly as bad as maybe some of the podcasts that Richard has suggested that you listen to. but overall, it's not that bad. So definitely check out Dinner with Racers if you're into auto racing at all. And then while that's it for me, Marcus is back this week with another music report for you guys. So let's jump right into Marcus's picks this week.
Hey, everybody. This is Marcus with your Music Minute. And I wanted to talk to you about complete album experience. And what I mean by that is you can go into any digital music marketplace and you can buy individual songs. That's great. You can make your own personal greatest hits collection. That's awesome. But there's something to be said about the album that from beginning to end, every song, every lyric, every inflection, every note, every beat, just makes you a complete and total experience from the start to the finish. And so there are five albums I wanted to share with you that do that for me. From the very first song to the very last song, they take me on a great little journey, and there's really no song I need to skip. It's all just one complete masterpiece for me. So here's the five albums that for me work that way, and I would like for you guys to try them out and let me know what you think. They are Rhythm Nation by Janet Jackson, System by Seal, Emotional Technology by BT, 21 by Adele, and Universal Truth by Andy Caldwell. So those are the five song albums I recommend. So I want you guys to try them out and then let me know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at Trombone for Hire if you want to let me know what you think about these albums, or if you want to suggest other albums that you think fall into this category. I would love to hear suggestions. I would love to try them out for myself. So that's this week's Music Minute, and I will talk to you guys next time.
All right. Thank you, Marcus. Some interesting picks there. Richard, how many of these do you own?
I have two of those, perhaps somewhat. I think this is irony. I only have one song from Adele 21.
All right. So what are the other two that you have?
I have Rhythm Nation and System. And I can see what he means about Rhythm Nation. System, I love that album by Seal. I think it is his absolute best album that he's ever put out. And I do enjoy listening to it front to back.
All right.
How about you?
I don't think I own any of these, actually. If I were to own any of them, it would probably be BT's Emotional Technology. I do own some of his other albums, so I don't know if I've ever listened to that one though. So I'm going to go and check that out. BT is that's EDM or trance or whatever you want to call it. There's lots of names for electronic music. BT's kind of a trance pioneer though. Adele, I only just recently started, like Jen came to me a couple weeks ago when Adele's latest album came out and said, "Hey, this isn't on Spotify. How should we buy this?" And so we bought the CD, and that's the first time I've ever actually listened to Adele. So I have no idea if 21 is any good. I'm going to take, take Marcus's word on that. And
well, it did win her 5 Grammys.
So it's probably pretty good. That probably says something. And I've never even heard of Andy Caldwell. So that's one that I'm definitely going to be looking up because I don't know anything about it. So hopefully the rest of you will heed Marcus' advice and go and check these out. And we'd love to hear back from you guys on what albums you think fit into this category. So again, he's Trombone for Hire on Twitter, or you can get a hold of us in all the ways that we'll go through in about, well, now. You can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at Digi Media Zone, D-I-G-I Media Zone. We're also on Facebook, where you can like our page at facebook.com/the DMZ. We're on Google Plus, or at least, well, Richard and the DMZ are. I kind of am, but I'm not active. There's also the Windows Media Center community that we've created over on Google Plus. You can send a message to our email box at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also check out some of our other podcasts, like The End User with Chris and Taylor. In case you haven't noticed, they haven't been, you know, doing that weekly. They're kind of switching to a monthly format on that show. Their lives have gotten kind of crazy, so they're switching it up a little bit. Don't worry, that doesn't mean 4-hour-long monthly podcasts. They're going to call that back to the most interesting news of the month. It won't be 4 straight weeks worth of information in one podcast. And then, of course, there's Home On, Richard's other show about home automation and control. You've been all over the place. What's the next episode got in store for us?
I have. So the new episode that's out is with Chris Compton, the host of Smart Home HQ, another smart home podcast that is part of the Geeks Network. And he joined me to go through a ton of news that has been piling up as we've been doing other stuff. So glad to be talking with him. And I think that that's a show that a lot of people will enjoy.
All right. Well, you can find all of our podcasts over on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and on Pocket Cast. And a lot of those places give you the ability to leave ratings and reviews. And frankly, that's the best way that you can help us out and show your appreciation of our shows is by leaving us a rating or a review over at iTunes. And we greatly appreciate it when you do that. And the other fun thing you can do to talk back with us is come and listen to the show live. We almost always record this live. That means you can come to our website, listen to us, stream it to you while we're recording it, and hear all of the things that we mess up and talk with us. So, you know, we mentioned some comments from Sola Swede and some from Alan earlier in the chat. You guys help us make this show better, and I think it's a whole lot of fun. You can do that typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, but we're not always the most consistent. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be doing those live shows. That's going to do it for episode 351. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 352. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.